Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Overthrows podcast. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at @DefMango on Twitter. And with me, as always, is Jared Kimber, who you can find everywhere. We've got a few people in the comments. Davy Goss, Shafiuddin, Madhav, Hacker, Abdul, Soham Bhattacharya, Parth Kohli, and Kachua Chop. I know there's more of you guys, but we have to get on with the show because New Zealand has defeated India in the Pune Test to take an unassailable 2-0 lead in this series versus India. A 113-run victory, which basically ended India's 12-year unbeaten run in their own backyard. Jared, we recorded like 4 different podcasts on how India were near invincible at home and no team in contemporary cricket was set up to win a series there in tests. And we literally built a friggin' time machine in one of the podcasts, right? And picked teams from the past and everything. And New Zealand, of all teams, have ended the streak. This is all so bizarre and amazing at the same time.
I was wondering before if we did a simulation of what this series was. How many times would this be the result? Like, just put the teams down on paper and run it through a system and it would be... I'm not saying it would never happen, but is it 5 times out of 1,000 that this would happen?
Yeah. We were discussing odds, remember? And both of us were like, yeah, they don't even win a single test match. We didn't even have them for that. They've gone and won 2. And they're, you know, they still have a game left.
So I don't know what the odds would have been for them to win the series, because I'm not even sure anyone would have bet on it. Like, it wouldn't have been a good bet. Like, I don't think the bookies would have put it up that much. I could be wrong. You know, if someone has put it up or bet on it or seen it, let us know. But I would assume they didn't. You know, maybe after the first test they might have. But you're talking about something that was probably 25-1, 50-1, 100-1. Like, and there would have been no odds that really would have got people all that excited about that. So to begin with, just from that point of view, it's crazy. And then you look at what happened. Like, they bowled India out for 46. They had a 350-run lead. They gave up that lead and almost lost that game anyway. Then they fought back and won easily.
Yeah.
The next match, we're like, okay, well, it's going to spin more. Bracewell's going home. Kane's still not available. Like, there are all these things of, you know, New Zealand was going to have more confidence. So I think we all knew that. But it was going to be business as usual again. And it was anything but business as usual. When a guy with a first-class bowling average of 42 comes in and say, someone's going to have to do the maths in the group. But my memory is he had 54 test wickets and he took 13 in this test match. So in 28 test matches, he's taken, not many wickets, like less than 2 wickets a game. And then he did something like, do you know what I'm going to do? Just the 13. I'm going to drop 13 wickets. Like, it's bizarre, right? It's so out there. And the other thing is, like, I mean, I know we'll get into all the details, but they had a pitch that clearly suited to taller spinners more than it did normal spinners. Like, I don't think I've seen that often. I don't think I've ever thought to look that up. India had 2 tall spinners and they had Santner, right? Yeah, like, how does Ashwin and Washington lose out to Mitch Santner in any contest like that? Like, it's so weird.
It's literally like there are no words to explain how this is actually reality, because as you said, Mitch Santner prior to this test match had played 28 tests and debuted God knows how long ago, right? He's a senior player now. He's 32 years of age. He had 54 wickets in those 28 test matches. He had no fourfers prior to this test match, and he goes on to take 7 for 53 and 6 for 104, 13 wickets out of 20, you know, in this test match. Absolute chaos, right?
I actually remember when... At one stage, I think it might have taken 2 or 3 wickets. And I went looking for his stats. And Gary Morgan was working with us on TalkSport. And he found them straight away. Because I said, I can't imagine he's ever taken 3 wickets in a test. And if he's taken 3, the chances are he's never taken 4, right?
Like, I mean, Jared, he has 67 wickets in total now. 13 have come in this very game. That's 19.5% or something of his entire test wicket tally in one game out of 29. Just, you know, it's hard to just absorb all of that information and make some sort of sense of it.
It's so weird. I don't know. I just can't imagine I've seen this kind of thing very often. I'm trying to think of, I mean, because you might get it with a younger bowler, right? You might get it with a Michael Bevan taking 10 wickets in Adelaide against you know, it's what about not Border? Very common.
When hey? Border took all those wickets versus the West
Border,
Indies.
Border West Indies is another very good one. Oh, you know, when you see Joe Root and Michael Clarke, but Joe Root and Michael Clarke, like, had some, like, I don't know, it just seems so weird. Like, if Bracewell doesn't get his wife pregnant at the wrong time, right, he doesn't play Santner.
Yeah. I mean, Santner didn't have a good tour in New Zealand, Sri Lanka either.
No. Take that back. Not a good tour is I took wickets at 60 or 50 or 45. Do you know what his average was?
What was it? 100 and something?
It was 173 or 197 or something like that. Like
Bond will have it.
It's not a bad series. It's a calamitous series, right?
Which is what makes this like chaos magic in Pune, right? I mean, I don't know if you probably don't follow the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but chaos magic is what the Scarlet Witch is responsible for in that particular universe. And this was literally Scarlet Witch.
I've seen every single MCU movie. Me and Muku have been working on a whole series about MCU. Don't worry about that. There's plenty of MCU in this house. Yeah, no, you're right.
He was basically the Scarlet Mitch in this test match, right? He even had the beard for it, the red beard, which he should never, ever get rid of. Like, I just felt like this was not even a coming of age because we've seen the best of Santner. We were surprised by him in the ODI World Cup as well. But this was just even, you know, more remarkable than that. It was just that weird.
Oh, it's just, I mean, I don't.
197, by the way. 197 was his average in Sri Lanka.
It was 197, was it? There you go. Yeah. I mean, this is kind of what I'm saying. Like go back. Someone put this comment up, and I'm sorry, I've forgotten who it was, but someone put the comment up today of like Tim Southee outscored India in an innings. And then Mitch Santner took 13 wickets in this test match. Do you know how many wickets Jadeja and Ashwin have combined in this series?
Not a lot, right?
12.
Yeah, there you go.
In one match, he's managed to out-bowl two of the greatest spin bowlers we've ever seen at all time. Nothing in his record to suggest that this was about to happen.
And while it also speaks volumes of how good Santner was, you've got to say, like, Ashwin took the first three wickets in the game and then just didn't turn up till the third innings. He took five in total. Jadeja took three in the third and none in the first. And that's just not good enough from two spinners who are legends of the game and one of the best bowling partnerships of all time. I mean, Washington Sundar out-bowled them, right? That's not what you sort of expect coming into this game.
No. I mean, and also, like, let's imagine I said to you before, how many did he end up with? 10 or 11?
Washington, 11.
11. So if I told you coming into this game that Washington Sundar was going to take 11 wickets, what's the result?
I mean, of course, you'd think it would be an Indian win, right? There's one 7 for 59 in there, right? But that makes it even more crazy. And Washington, like, look, when we spoke about him in the previous podcast when we were covering this series, you didn't even like think that they would play him, right? But you've still been vindicated in many ways because this massive Washington Sundar supporter. Oh. And here he is, comes into the side and replaces Kuldeep, right? It's a very hot sort of selection call. And 7 for 59 and then 4 for in the second innings as well. 11 wickets in total. Looked one of the better batters, you know, and in the Indian side as well. He really grabbed this opportunity with both arms.
Yeah, it's funny because everyone's going on and on about our videos and everything and about the Indian time travel stuff. And it's like, but we also got a few things right. Like, I called exactly how New Zealand might win a test. I didn't call the Pune test, but I called exactly how they might win a test in this series. And we called the Washington Sundar thing. And it's all bullshit anyway. Do you know what I mean? All that sort of stuff is bullshit, but people get very obsessed about all of it. But look, I'm just glad. I know how talented he is. And I also know how tough it is if you're a young all-rounder who's been picked really, really early on. He doesn't know what his main skills are even as a cricketer at this stage, right? And I remember seeing Mitchell Marsh. I did a piece about Mitchell Marsh and Ben Stokes. I want to say the 2015 Ashes. I don't think it was 2019, but it might have been 2019, but whichever series it was. No, it must have been 2019. And I was like, the difference between Mitch Marsh and Ben Stokes isn't as much as probably what an average fan would think. But one of them is thought of as this absolute hero-level genius. And the other one is seen as this busted flush, right? And now we're kind of seeing what Mitch Marsh has done. And it's because it takes longer. Mitch Marsh had to work out his game. And, you know, he was a footballer until he was 18. And, you know, he's a big guy. And big guys, sometimes with their batting, struggle a little bit more in test cricket because they get a few more balls that, you know, they get more short balls than they used to. And even if you're a good player of short balls like he is, it's still harder. You know, all these different things have, he had his big front leg in the way and everything else. So
he changed his action a bit, I felt. Have you noticed that?
I think he just got, you know, are you talking about Washington?
Yes, I'm talking about Washington.
Yeah, I think the last time I saw him bowl in Test cricket, so was that in Brisbane?
Might have been the Border Gavaskar Trophy.
Yeah.
He's played 4 tests, right? So
yeah, and I've seen him obviously play limited overs cricket since then. He's bowled pretty much what I would call like a part-timer. Not like a bad part-timer, but as in trying to spin it, trying to rush it through, not thinking about it. But what you could see with his bowling was he was getting overspin or side spin on the ball, right?
Yeah, he was getting it to rip big time. Rajan Ravindra was completely undone by him.
Yeah, but getting it to rip big time is fine because Joe Root could do that, right? I don't think Joe Root could come in and get overspin and then get side spin and do it on purpose in the way that he needed to do. So Joe Root can drop his arm and do some other tricks, right? But that's what batters do. Washington was doing was like a bowler and, you know, happened to be commentating with Gareth Batty, and Gareth Batty was like he's leveled up massively. And I promise you, Gareth Batty is the harshest person on finger spin and I'm talking about off air that you'll ever meet, because he was a perfectionist and, you know, he understands the art and can explain it. And he's sitting there going, this guy is legit. And this is what I was talking about with someone like Washington. That wasn't the bowler I saw before. The bowler I saw before was tall, fast, and could give it a bit of a spin. Right? Those are all really good skills to have. Now he looks like a proper frontline bowler. And whoever saw him in the Nets, in the A games, in the Juleep Trophy, whatever, wherever it was, and said he's ready, well done to them as well.
It was also a good ploy. I mean, of course, there are not a lot of positives for India in this game, but you know, the strategy to go in with 2 right arm off spinners and then 17 wickets falling to right arm off spin, 11 of which actually were from Washington alone. That was quite insane as well. And I mean, we'll come to New Zealand's batting in a bit, but just from an overall context sort of, you know, bird's eye view, this team was not set up to win in India at all as per their squad.
It still isn't, Bayram.
Yeah. They did not even have Kane Williamson, who is their best batter ever, or has a case to be their best batter ever, and is a phenomenal player of spin. They've never won a test series in India before. They'd only won 2 test matches and now they've doubled that tally. And Pune, unlike Bengaluru, didn't even offer familiar conditions to them. They were very, very dissimilar. They were very Indian conditions, which is what makes all of this fucking wild.
Do you know what? I think that's the thing for me. As an analyst, I can explain the first test, right? It's a bit of not a fluke, but a bit of a confluence of events that made it so as dramatic as it was. But I can explain that. I can kind of say here, well, Mitch Santner was tall and the ball kept a little bit low for him. And, you know, I can have that kind of conversation. I'm not sure that fully explains the better batting from New Zealand as well. The fact that the reverse sweeps got to Ashwin and Jadeja. Yeah. I think New Zealand got marginally the better batting conditions because the first innings was probably the best one to bat in. But I still think, looking at the pitch and looking at all the data we have on the pitch, that India should have scored at least around the same score, right?
Yeah. So if you look at India's batting in their first innings and some of those dismissals, right? Kohli yorked himself, misjudged that full toss or what he should have made into a full toss. And then Rishabh Pant's dismissal was very ugly. And then Sarfaraz got out, you know, on the offside again. And they were showing these clips of how he continues to get out the same way, whether it's a pacer or a spinner. Those 3 dismissals, I was watching them live. I didn't catch a lot of this game, but that particular phase, I did. And I had like a screen on in front of me and Pakistan's game in the backdrop. I mean, those are shocking dismissals. That's kind of where India lost it, their first innings with the bat.
And I think if you look at those 3 dismissals kind of on their own, Sarfaraz is probably the only one that you throw completely under the bus. I mean, Kohli I've played that shot of Kohli's before. I know exactly what that is. That is, oh, wait, that's a full toss. I should hit this away easily and get some cheap runs. And you're too late to make the decision, right?
Yeah.
And Rishabh was facing a part-timer. He saw a short ball and thought, oh, I'll whack this out of the park. This will be absolutely easy here. It wasn't quite as short as he thought, and then it kept low, right? Like, whatever. But the fact that they were 3 in a row, and if you look at it, it's kind of what we've been saying about Indian batting for a long period of time, is that, you know, they gave England a chance by giving away their wickets on a pitch that they should have made an absolute ton of, and lost that other test as well. we've seen this time and time again, that their batting hasn't been good. And generally, it's been the long batting order that has bailed them out. The long batting order didn't bail them out this time.
They had a very long, unusually long.
Even longer long than order. Normal, right?
Yeah. I mean, Washington was coming into bat at number 9 in the first innings.
Exactly. And Ashwin was number 9 in the second. So, it's crazy. Ashutosh says, for India to lose a series, opposition batters had to outbat India and also India to bat quite poorly. So the second one, I think, makes a little bit more sense, just because I've been, writing about it for a long time, that batting, I know part of it is the pitches, but also I just don't think India's batting has been as solid as it should have been in a long time. Maybe the pitches are the reason, but either way, the interesting thing here is if you go through, I think the only player, I think Ratchan Ravindra's average was quite good, but that was a lot of those runs were in a double century against South Africa And then you've got, then you had Kane Williamson at average heaps, but he wasn't playing in this game. Hmm. Everyone else in the last 18 months to 2 years, I can't remember the exact time frame, with really ordinary. So it's not like you're being batted away by Harry Brook and Joe Root or Ben Duckett or Travis Head or some sort of really Steve Smith type, strong batting lineup. You are being batted away by a bunch of players who don't generally make a lot of runs in Asia and specifically hadn't played good cricket in Sri Lanka and with better bowlers going up against them. Like, that is the thing that I find the most unlikely, that every detail, Ashutosh, that you go through of the New Zealand batting, you're like, well, they can't keep doing this, right? And you take out Glenn Phillips and maybe Blundell a little bit, but he batted really well in the last inning. You take away Glenn Phillips, it was like, they all kind of had a moment or put a partnership on or did something. Even Glenn Phillips, I suppose, stayed in at the end, but he looked so confused by batting on these wickets all the way through. Whereas I felt like everyone else had a moment where they worked it out. And yeah, it's crazy.
This was made using MB Plays Insights. What they have done for England and New Zealand test players, they can do for club cricket as well.
And I mean, to be fair to New Zealand, right, sure, they were an out-of-form team coming into this test series. And Devon Conway hadn't been in form for a long time. Mm. Ratchan Ravindra, of course, scored that double 100 versus South Africa D. But both of these guys doubled up in this game. You know, yes, the first innings was the best to bat and also it's a really good toss to win. But Conway scoring 76 and Ratchan scoring 65 again, performing two tests in a row. And then the way they took spin on. Right? They were even advancing down the track. I mean, Conway was at least. Mm. And I feel like that is one of the major reasons why New Zealand have won over here, because two of their batters have really put their hands up and said that, all right, we'll be the consistent scorers over here, especially in Kane's absence.
I mean, but why have they not been consistent scorers for a long period?
Ratchan is new, so you have to give him that. Conway has gone through a terrible patch. He started off, as a prolific
batter. Yeah, but you know what I mean? Like, why didn't they make runs in Sri Lanka?
That's a very good question.
it's not like they suddenly decided to be good, is it? Like, I can't answer this, because the more, there are little bits of analysis we could do, like the pitch for Santner. Mm. The fact that Indians probably bowled a little bit too quick. I think Jimenez has put up a tweet up about that as well. And it was kind of, we hinted at it in the scoreboard a little bit as well. I think Santner got more uneven bounce that was dangerous for whatever reason. There were little bits, but when it comes down to it, I can't really explain why so many people played above their normal or their recent form, and sometimes in some of these cases, above their best, and why so many people on the other side played beneath it. Like, that is, for one test, I think is fair, but for it to happen in two tests in a row, it's like, I don't know. Like, I cannot fully explain that at all.
And I mean, India's batting failed completely. That 156 in that first innings, not taking any credit away from Santner and New Zealand's bowling. It was phenomenal. But some of those wickets, like, those weren't great deliveries. Yes, the ball was keeping a bit low. You can say that. Right?
Yeah, I think that's
fair. That was pretty much it. It wasn't a minefield, Jared.
It wasn't. In the other test, we saw the ball that Ben Duckett went out to.
Hmm. Exactly.
That's keeping low, right?
That's
keeping low. What we saw from Santner was low-ish bounce from shortish ball, but it was, I think he took 6 or 7 wickets that landed around the 5.5 meter mark that just kept doing the same thing, right?
Yeah.
And all the way through, I didn't check it, but I would assume that the Virat Kohli one, which is the last really important wicket at that stage, they were gone from the game once he went out, was just another one, right? So Kohli is playing on the back foot. he looked fine. He looked like he was seeing the ball pretty well. And again, just another one goes through and you just keep watching it again and again. So many times it seemed to happen in a row. I don't know what makes something like that happen. And it was pretty much one bowler, right? Like, so we started looking up the stats to see when the last time a bowler took 16 wickets in a test match. Uh-huh. Because I'd already made the joke that I was positive there was going to be a run out because there's always a comedy run out in chases. And thank you to Vera and Rishabh for giving me that one. But like, I thought there was a legitimate chance that Santner was just going to take all 9 wickets and that one person was going to win a game for a team, right? And Ajaz didn't bowl particularly well. Glenn Phillips, I thought, bowled well later on, but this thing was out of the game by the time he started bowling well. It was literally Santner on his own. It was weird.
Santner, daylight, and the rest. And I mean, we expected Ajaz Patel to take a lot of wickets, but he wasn't as successful. But coming to India's batting for a bit, of course, everyone failed, but there was this one knock, Yashasvi Jaiswal, in the fourth innings, 77 off 65. And for a minute over there, you felt like India had a shot, at least till he was out there. I mean, that's quite a contrast to everything else that we saw in this test match from India.
It was such an incredible start to the innings, which is now, it's going to be lost. But my God, so that first ball, he tries to slap away and almost gets caught. An incredible fielding by Glenn Phillips. Cameron Green and Glenn Phillips, we have two of the best gully fielders I think I've ever seen playing cricket at the same time at the moment. Brilliant effort. Elmers goes out first ball, and the next ball, he bowls essentially at the top of off stump and just gets hoiked away across the line. And we were just like, what the hell is actually happening here? And Jaiswal was playing the kind of innings that he didn't play very well in the IPL. Like, he looked like he was in better form than he ever had in the IPL. And you're like, what? And I get it. They were trying to capitalize on the new ball, but Jesus, he was seeing the ball so well. And they were actually favorites in that game on a lot of the betting markets. And it just shows you. Yeah, it just shows you how much things swing around once they get that momentum. And to be fair, like, I got it. I wouldn't have bet on India. In fact, I meant to bet on New Zealand and I never quite got around to it. And sadly, I missed out on an easy win there in the end. But it was just so brutal. I thought he looked incredible. But how stark he has looked compared to some of the others where they haven't just looked as sharp all the way through, right?
Yeah, no, it's been the template, or not template, but the theme for India in this test series. I think the batting has let them down. And I mean, of course, you know, law of averages eventually catches up. They had gone 18, you know, test series at home in which they won every single one of them, right? So you'd expect a freak incident like this, but the fact that it was New Zealand makes it freakier, which is basically the crux of it. Soham Bhattacharya with the super chat over here says, first time India played two proper bad batches back-to-back at home in 12 years. Yes, that's true. And he also mentions the law of averages and says that it was on the card. So, we share the same opinion, I suppose.
Yeah, I didn't expect this
team to do it.
Yeah.
That's the only thing.
Playing two bad games back-to-back, Soham, they've probably done before, right, in this run. What they haven't done is lost to a team who, since the World Test Championship, has 8 wins in 23 matches.
Yeah.
What they haven't done is lost to a team who historically has been poor in Asia and historically has been terrible in India. Like,
and I mean, Mitch Santner wasn't the spinner we were talking about prior to the series, right?
Mitch Santner, imagine saying that one of New Zealand's strengths was going to be Mitch Santner in this series. Like, imagine saying that in your WhatsApp group to your friends.
We were talking about how Bracewell should start ahead of him.
And he still should have, if you think about it, because they needed a left-arm finger spinner and an off-spinner. And then come to the fact that Ajaz Patel took 10 wickets in an innings last time he was in India. How many wickets does he have in this series, Bayram?
What, 4?
4! He has 4 wickets! They are 2-0 up. They are 2-0 up. And the person that we thought would need to have taken about 15 to 18 wickets for them to be competitive, not good, not winning, but competitive, has 4 wickets so far. Like, it's crazy to say that they have won. That they're winning this series on the back of Tim Southey making a 60 and Mitch Santner taking 13 wickets.
Yeah. And I mean, of course, there was some good bowling by Matt Henry and William O'Rourke as well. But then again, Bengaluru made more sense because those were very New Zealand-like conditions. This was not supposed to happen. No one could have, like, even the people who could have predicted some, you know, Indian loss in the Bengaluru test would have been like, nah, they're not losing in Pune. And Tanmay Joshi over here has a super chat actually on Ijaz Patel. He says, is asking you, Jared, why Ijaz has been so ineffective on a spin-friendly pitch and why Glenn Phillips looked more threatening.
Look, Glenn Phillips also bowled a lot of bad balls. I think Glenn Phillips is one of those part-timers whose best ball is incredible. He's not quite at the Bracewell or Moeen Ali level yet, but I do think he has a good ball. And also, Glenn Phillips probably has that sort of KP Joe Root thing of thinking like a batter a little bit in the way he bowls. In fact, Monty said that about Santner today, by the way, which I thought was quite interesting as well. But certainly in Phillips' case, he's got that. But Ijaz Patel just doesn't look like he has the confidence to rip the ball where and land it where he wants to. I've just noticed a couple of times he's been putting the ball back in his fingers a little bit gingerly. And I asked Monty where he thought, because he hasn't bowled a lot and suddenly he's been asked to bowl quite a bit over the last couple of test matches. I wondered if he might not have slightly opened up a callus or damaged a callus a little bit. But I don't think he's ever been really deadly accurate in the way that, say, Jack Leach could be, right? I'm trying to think of someone else like, you know, those kinds of bowlers.
Maharaj. Just like,
yeah, Maharaj. Those sort of bowlers are just automatic on a spot. Nathan Lyon is another one. Jadeja is another one, right? I don't think he's ever been quite that. In that way. And this is a series where teams are scoring really, really quickly. He's also, like I talked to him before the series and I was like, how are you going to go against Rishabh Pant? Jaiswal as well. Like he's got two left-handers who are trying to end him and he just didn't look comfortable. You watch him bowl into Jaiswal today, he didn't really seem to have a plan and he wasn't able to execute the sort of the basic bowling he was going with. Someone asked a question in the chat about like Tom Latham. Tom Latham set some terrible fields for Ijaz Patel today. We're like, what? He's bowling over the wicket, a foot and a half outside off stump, and you've got a slip, a deep backward point, and a long off. How the hell is he supposed to keep any pressure on this guy at all, right? Like, so I just think he looked really, really low in confidence. But if you want the other answer, it's the shorter spinners, Phillips, Jadeja and Ijaz Patel just did not look anywhere near as threatening as the guys who bowl it from over 210 centimetres. So there is an analytical point there as well.
Yeah. Interesting comment over here from Mohib Aslin, who says that Rangana Herat's addition potentially paid off. Well, I mean, if you look at Santner, sure, but Ijaz Patel didn't do so well. So
but
I'm
wasn't
not sure.
Rangana with them in Sri Lanka?
He was.
That's what I thought. I thought he was with them on this whole tour. I could be misremembering the original news article about this. So I find it hard to say that Rangana Herath is the reason. And as you said, the spinner they thought was going to be their best spinner hasn't bowled particularly well. You know, their second best spinner in this series has been Glenn Phillips. Like, you know, Ijaz Patel is miles off at this stage. The three best spinners in this series have not bowled at all like the three best spinners in this series.
Yeah, I mean, right? Imagine having a Turner, right? A surface which rags. And we are here recording a podcast talking about guys like Mitch Santner and Washington Sundar who weren't even on the menu, right?
Glenn Phillips, mean, right? Like, it's silly. Yeah. Like, the other three guys have 16 wickets between them in two matches. Mm-hmm. And I kind of think that flatters them a little bit at times as well.
Absolutely. And I suppose on that note, let's take a break. You're watching Overthrows with Behram and Jared, and we'll be back with you in just a moment.
Thanks to NVPlay's Data Insights for helping me with this video. They can help any cricket team improve their skills using their advanced technology.
Welcome back to Overthrows. You guys are with Jared and Behram. And we've talked a lot about a lot of performers already, Jared, but there's one guy I feel he was the best batter in the entire game. And we were discussing in our chat of how difficult it is for top order batters to score runs in, you know, turning conditions, right? Especially when you have something like Pune where the new ball is taken by spinners quite often. Now, Tom Latham has cemented his name in history by becoming the only New Zealand captain to win a test series in India. And his 86 in the third innings when, you know, India were looking for wickets. And I mean, it's always hard to face the new ball versus guys like Ashwin, especially when you're a left-hander. Mm. I mean, there wasn't much going for him in terms of matchups and, you know, permutations and probabilities. But here he is, a top scorer in the test match.
I did think in this test that probably the first 10 to 15 overs, maybe even 20 overs, was the best time to bat. Look at Jaiswal, for instance.
True.
And I think the reason India went so hard in that second innings is because they felt like they missed out in the first innings of being able to do that. What I liked about Latham, though, was I'm not saying he didn't know that, but he did. He, I want to say he hit a four and a two and a single or something. I can't remember the exact start to the innings, but he was just like, no, 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 we're going to play this way, right? We are not going to let them settle. If they get us out, they get us out. But we are going to put pressure right back on them from the first ball of the second innings, and they are going to have to work out how to handle this, you know, reversing and sweeping and all these sorts of things. And you know, it will never get the same sort of respect that Ben Stokes would for running through a wall, right? But that's what it is. He was risking embarrassment. Like, if he goes out early and they have a mini collapse and India come back into that test, we're all like, I can't believe Latham was reverse sweeping all those balls and missed one. And he's missed some in this series when he's tried that shot before, right? But he was like, this is the best way. And I think what New Zealand realized, maybe more so after India collapsed, but maybe even realized in their first innings as well, is that this was a wicket where there was a chance coming pretty regularly, right? Like, I think there was 450-run partnerships in the entire game. Like, if you look at it, there's just no period of time where any team was batting for, you know, ages. And so
it's the sort of mindset that if you're just going to play 50 to 60 deliveries on a good day, make those deliveries count.
Yeah, I remember, what's his name? Matt Prior talking about, he realized in Test cricket that he only had a certain amount of balls that he would be able to face, and that he wasn't good enough to be able to face 100 or 150 balls. I can't remember what his was. Maybe his was 100 balls. But he's like, I can face 100 balls, and in that 100 balls, I want to be 60 runs, right? Uh-huh. If I can do that, I can impact my team. And occasionally, I'll be able to break through that barrier. And of course, a few other times, trying to bat at that speed, I'm going to go out. And it felt to me that that's kind of what Latham was saying. Right. I'm going to try and score off every single ball here as much as possible, take some pressure off the rest of my batters so that they can bat just normally even. And you know, and allow for that to happen. And you know, you watch it. It's a gutsy thing. It's a smart thing. He then went on to make runs. Right. Like, it could have just been a cheeky 30 odd, right? Well, he didn't. He actually went all the way. I just wanted to find, what was it? It was
100 plus deliveries.
It wasn't the first over I was thinking about. Oh, wait. I'm looking at the first innings. It's the second innings, isn't it? Sorry.
Which makes the knock all the more special, because he scores the most amount of runs in the game, and that too in tougher conditions than what New Zealand had faced earlier.
So here it is. First ball is paddle sweep for two. The next one, I think, was a proper sweep. And then the next one after that, he dropped the ball on the offside and went. So they were seven runs off three balls on what is, what, a tricky pitch to bat on? Is that the best way of putting it? Like, it's, you know, I don't think it was a minefield at all, but I think it was a wicket, which you said that, as I kind of felt like every 30 runs it was going to be a wicket. Do you know what I mean? Like, even if there was a good partnership. So when Kohli started making runs, that was when I was going to bat New Zealand, because I was like, okay, he's due. Well, not him, but him or was it Washington? I think he was with at the time. I was like, one of them's due. Like, I just started to program my brain. Like, do you know what I mean? Of like, it was coming. And so for Latham to go about it the way he did. And then, as you said, he ends up making a really big score in a low scoring game, right? There's not a lot of runs scored in this game in the end. A lot of people went on and on about his captaincy. I'm not sure I've looked at his captaincy as genius at any time. I think it's been very, very competent, right? But professionally competent, like, from that point of view. But that innings, I was like, it would be very easy for a player like him to just try and block it out. And he was like, no, this is the time we have to score. And I don't know what they were at that point. What, let's say they got to the 20 over mark. And they, it wasn't like they sent Jaiswal out to swing from the hip or anything, right? But they got to a point where they're scoring at what, four and a half runs and over.
We haven't really seen this from New Zealand and Asia before. I mean, we all remember that Abu Dhabi test match, but that was a bit of a road, right, versus Pakistan. That's the only one I can think of. This is very, very new for them.
Yes. And I think, you know, being prepared to fail, it sounds weird. Do you remember, you probably wouldn't have watched it, when New Zealand went to India last time?
I did. We were working together, weren't we? We spoke about the Ajaz Patel Denver. I think so.
I don't think you were working for me then, but really? I'm sure we've talked about it. But hey, so do you remember Blundell in that series?
Not really, no.
I've got a memory of Blundell making a 400 ball six. It might only have been a 50 ball six. But he was terrified. He didn't know what to do. And he spent the entire innings just trapped, right? Mm. Trying to use his feet, but then using his feet and being really nervous because he was never near the pitch of the ball and like blocking or hitting it onto his pad. Blundell has not made a lot of runs. Rishabh Pant is probably one of the few Indian players who has done what you want him to do while he's had a knee in place anyway. He's done exactly what you want him to do. And Blundell has struggled a little bit, you know, dropped a sitter in the first test and his batting hasn't been great. But that 41 today, again, was very similar to what Latham did. Sweeps and reverse sweeps, taking little risks, but taking risks in a way that meant that Ashwin and Jadeja specifically, but also Washington, just couldn't bowl ball after ball to him. And if you go back and you look at some of those old innings, I mean, I could be slightly exaggerating because, you know, I don't remember every single cricket game I've seen, but my memory is that he just could not get off the strike. And if, you know, we did this in during this test match. We had a look. The last three series, India have won both of them. They lost the test against England. They did incredible work against Bangladesh. And then they've lost this series against against New Zealand. But if you look at the fact, at what is the consistent side of it, it's that teams have started scoring quicker against them. It is no longer a case that Ashwin is just going to bowl ball after ball. And I think Ashwin at his absolute best is like, you're not going to score off me. So I'm going to try this and now this and now this, but I'm going to land the ball roughly in the same spot time after time again. And you're not going to be able to do anything. And teams now are like, no, we are. Hmm. Right? And we're going to sweep and reverse you.
You've got to doff your hat to Tom Latham for that. I know you aren't particularly impressed with his captaincy and field settings and everything.
I don't mean I'm not impressed. I just mean he led the way with the bat, right? He showed his team how to play here. I don't want that to sound like I'm not impressed. Hmm. I think a lot of people have said that they were like tactical geniuses. I didn't see a lot of tactics in I didn't see a tactical Stephen Fleming masterclass or a Jeremy Coney, extreme sort of I just saw professional captaining putting the fielders roughly in the right positions over and over again and a couple of bowling changes. Well, I never sat there going, wow, look at that move. I'm going to put that in my notebook for later. Yeah. I mean, it is
a strategic move to kind of go for it, right? And he showed or set the tone for the other batters as well. And I mean, the message was very clear. You look at Conway and Ruchin as well, and that's what they were trying to do.
So can I give you Blundell's figures from the last series?
Yes,
please. I've looked them up. It's worse than I remembered. He made 13 off 94 balls, 2 off 38 balls, 8 off 24 balls, a duck off 6, fine. That was his series.
Wow.
That was it. There we go. Varun's. I should have just waited for Varun.
Yeah. So
23 runs in 162 balls, right? And today, yesterday, whenever he was batting, he was playing reverse sweeps and taking chances, right? Like he was trying to do something. And I think if there's any credit I would give India in New Zealand, it is that they came in with a, not like a baseball mentality, not even like a Bangladesh mentality, right? But they came in with a thing of, we're just going to try a bunch of things and we're going to see how it goes. First test falls in their favor. Great. But you said before, Conway and Ruchin Ravindra, really interesting in that first test.
Yeah.
Latham and Blundell, really, really interesting in this test. They've been willing to perhaps make fools of themselves in order to win. They haven't been nervous. And if you go back through the full 18 series, especially once India got that momentum at home and people started to really fear them, teams were turning up and just trying to block Ashwin out for hours on end. And you cannot block out Ashwin because he's too good. Teams now are like, no, we're going to reverse sweep you and you're going to have to work out what you want to do now.
Yeah. And I mean, if you look at Blundell's performances from that last series and at least the performances that we've seen in this one and this test in particular, kind of epitomizes the change in approach that New Zealand have had. Yeah. One quick question, of course, I didn't really watch a lot of this game, right? I watched it in small phases. I noticed there were a couple of drop chances on either side. Was there any particular chance over there you felt might have been fatal for one of the teams?
That's
India?
A good question. That's a really good question. I'm trying to think. There were a few drops. I mean, I kind of would say no. I'm trying to think if Latham was dropped. I don't remember that off the top of my head. And I kind of say no based on the fact that the reason I thought New Zealand would win quite comfortably, unless Santner got injured and he did start to pull at his side muscle, I would have changed my mind pretty quickly if he was injured. But the reason I thought was that this was definitely, if you bowled 60 overs, I thought you could create between 14 and 16 chances. So even when there were drops, I don't think it was, it wasn't, well, no one went on to make huge amounts of runs from that point of view. So I think New Zealand missed a run out chance, you know, and there was a couple of other, moments. There was, actually, I think there was a bunch of half chances that could have gone India's way this morning. Mm-hmm. That didn't quite, I can't remember if there was a drop specifically, but there was like an edge onto Rishabh's pads. I think there was an edge between the keeper and the slip as well. Like a there was a bunch of things, but they still kind of rolled through. That's what I mean. There was always going to be a wicket not that long after. There just wasn't the partnerships. It was a very different kind of test match. It was kind of a throwback to a 90s test match where, you know, it wasn't carnage. But it was like, unless you are really batting well or the opposition's bowling really poorly, there is going to be probably a ball that's going to dismiss you eventually. And that's probably, if you want to know the big thing, it goes back to the bit you did see, which is the three wickets that were given away on this. I think I would say off the top of my head that New Zealand probably only gave away Glenn Phillips in the first innings, and he was not going to make any runs. Right, just wasn't going to make a lot of runs, I don't think, in that innings, no matter what.
And I mean, chances will be dropped when you have a surface like this because there will be more opportunities. And there were drops on and missed chances on either side when I was kind of sifting through the information. But anyway, Varun, if you could bring up Manan Super Chat, who was asking about World Test Championship final prospects, right? Yeah. I am very curious about this as well because after the last... Or before the start of this test, you know, after the Bengaluru test, I was of the knowledge that India needed to win four more test matches. But they've accumulated another loss over here. So that probably messes things up for them a bit when it comes to, you know, qualification prospects for the final.
I think if they won four out of seven, they were fairly safe unless a bunch of things went against them. They're now in a situation where winning four out of six seems pretty hard. There's still ways that they could probably get in winning three because, you know, South Africa's batting lineup's a bit weird and everything else, but it's unlikely. The big issue I think that most people would have now, having seen them played in the last two tests and having seen their Border Gavaskar Trophy squad, is winning two tests in Australia looks like a real push. Like I always had that series down as 3-2 when I was doing my World Test Championship qualifications, which I thought was fair. It no longer feels that fair to say.
If we go back to that Footmarks podcast and how we talked about each series, look at all the weird results we've gotten. Bangladesh swept Pakistan 2-0 at home. Pakistan defeated England 2-1 at home, right? And now India have lost 2 out of 2 test matches versus New Zealand. I mean, can we even say with confidence at this point that India will win at the Wankhede?
No.
Yeah, we can.
I mean, they should. I haven't looked at the odds. They should. I'm sure they will start as favourites. Yeah?
But should, right?
But would
That's what
would
conventional either, wisdom suggests.
I can't imagine they don't start that test as favourites. But I can't imagine there are that many people who are going to be over the moon to back them. Right?
And also, they could have, you know, rested a few players if they were 2-0 up. Now they're going to have to play everybody.
I know. It keeps getting worse. And then you look at the squad... And you're like, okay, so there is no Shami. Now, maybe Shami gets fit halfway through and they just parachute him in. So that's best case scenario. But he's probably not playing in the first two tests. Uh-huh. Right?
Probably not.
Hardik Pandya, I'd been told, was in the background doing everything he could to get himself ready for that series. He's not there.
Yeah, Nitish Kumar Reddy is there ahead of him.
Big fan of him as a cricketer. What are we really expecting him to do, though? Average 35 with the bat and be important with the ball? Probably not. Not at this stage
in his
career.
That's too much. Yeah, he's going to be debuting, right? I don't see him playing the last test of this series at the Wankhede. But, you know, Bumrah, we didn't think that he should play all three test matches. He will end up playing all three test matches. He's probably the biggest one over here that we need to discuss.
If they want to go to the World Test Championship, doesn't he have to play all six from here?
Yeah, he does. And that is, you know, risky business because you'd want to take better care of him. But now you've got your backs against the wall and India have kind of dug a small little trench for themselves, which they can dig themselves out of, right? It's very possible that they do that. But also,
I think it's unlikely.
It's just the pressure. It's the pressure now.
I just think it's unlikely they dig themselves out of it without other results going in their way. So I think it is. Like, I just can't imagine they're going to win four of the next six test matches. They might win three of the next six test matches. It doesn't feel like it at the moment, but it didn't feel like Pakistan were going to win a series after their first test, right? Like, it didn't feel like New Zealand were going to win this series literally until the last week. That, well, maybe until Virat Kohli went out. So, you know, in certain ways.
I think it was the run out, the Rishabh Pant run out, that kind of just completely killed that chase off.
I still thought with Virat at the crease, and I thought he was looking okay. But my theory was unfortunately proved correct that every 35 runs someone was going to go out. But yeah, so I think it's still theoretically possible. I just feel like because they're playing Australia, they have a chance because they can take some wins away from Australia, right? And I believe much less in South Africa than most people do. I just think that South Africa is due a bunch of batting collapses. Because I still don't trust their batting at all. I thought they got themselves in trouble against Bangladesh in the first innings and then got out of it absolutely brilliantly. Every chance that Bangladesh causes us some issues. I really like the way that Sri Lanka is playing cricket of recent times.
I mean, they could, you know, win a test match in South Africa and then defeat Australia at home in both games. That's likely.
And what it could happen. And what about Pakistan? Can they win a test in South Africa?
They could potentially win a test match, but like their seamers didn't win them these games, right? So
Their seamers have been okay overseas, as we had checked. So
yep.
But there is the other thing in South Africa, which is rain. There might be a game washed out at one stage. So look, it's not impossible that South Africa have a bit more of a rough road on the way there. But it's also very possible that they smash Bangladesh, they go 1-1 with Sri Lanka, and then they smash Pakistan 2-0, and then it becomes very hard for India. And if, you know, and then there's all the other wild card in all this is Australia plays Sri Lanka.
So yes, if India, that's the big one. Yeah, it all boils down to that series.
Yeah, if India can take enough wins away from Australia, that other series could still go in their favor. So Indian fans are probably in a situation where they might have to support, you know, Bangladesh in their next game against Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, and then Pakistan in those three games as an Indian fan, and then Sri Lanka again. So it's going to be like the Indian fans are going to suddenly be the biggest fans of Asian cricket of all time, because they're going to need a bunch of wins, I would assume, to get through, because I just don't think they can win enough games on their own.
Yeah. I think they'll need Shami, right? Because I've seen that gulf between Bumrah and the next best seamer, and they desperately need him.
Thanks to NV Play for their in-depth performance analysis in this project. Discover more about their incredible tools and solutions on their website.
Anyway, let's take the other super chats, Varun, and call it a day. Who have we got next? Ashutosh123 says, like to see you review Bumrah's stats versus New Zealand in test matches.
We did the other day. Really.
Oh,
yeah,
you did?
Yeah. What are the numbers on the scoreboard? Like? They're not good. He hasn't taken a lot. I went through it pretty deep. His economy rate holds up. So I would say it's probably more a statistical thing than anything else. He's also played against a multitude of different batters. So it's not like he's got a bad matchup against the same guys over and over again. Like he hadn't bowled to Ravindra all that much or Conway all that much and anything else. He was all over some of those guys at certain times in the series, but hasn't got them out. I would think, Ashutosh, if you wanted to know the truth, it looks like a blip to me and I wouldn't worry about it at all.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. Let's go to the next one. We've got Kaushal Talapadi. He says DK in CricBuzz was suggesting the changing of domestic cricket pitches to green ones might have affected India's batters' ability to play spin. I mean, look, they were playing on turners for the longest time as well, and this is something that they should have been used to, even if it's very, very difficult. I don't know.
There's a part of me that thinks that, right? But Virat Kohli and Rohit Sharma haven't actually played on those wickets at all, right?
Exactly.
And Rahane and Pujara, maybe Pujara played a little bit more on those wickets, but I don't think that had anything to do with them. K.R. Rahul doesn't play a lot of domestic cricket anymore. So exactly. I find it hard to think that's a huge thing. And then let's look at this new generation that's coming through. Jaiswal and Gill and Safraz have all looked absolutely spectacular against spin at certain times in their career. So I find it hard to say that that is the case. What I would say is I do find it very interesting that in New Zealand, they went to flat surfaces, right? And what they really wanted was flat surfaces that would help hit the wicket bowlers and give their batters the ability to bat really long innings and also bring spinners into the game. And India went with our problem here is that we're not producing enough seamers. So let's make more green wickets and help produce the seamers. Yeah. I kind of prefer New Zealand's model out of the two. But Safraz has come through that system and Shreyas Iyer has come through that system. True. And they are two fantastic players of spin, right?
Absolutely.
And as we just said, there's a bunch of other guys who haven't even gone through that.
Jaiswal. So, throw Jaiswal into this, right?
He's Jaiswal as well. Same. Yeah. So Shreya, like, he's talking about that as well. I get all that, right? But I don't know how that directly relates to the people that we've seen in here. I think the test wickets have played a much bigger part in it than that.
After
this series, I'll try and get DK on a podcast and we'll have a chat about it and we'll go through it deeply. And he might be able to elaborate on what he means. But from my vantage point, I don't think that 100% holds up. But as I said, I like what New Zealand did more than what India did with their pitches. But I actually like the fact that teams are now thinking about that. Australia using the juke balls at home, like all those sorts of things. That's what first class cricket should be for.
Yeah, even Pakistan has now started to use or will start to use Duke's balls in their domestic structure. I don't know which competition
for a week.
There's so many.
They'll do it for a week and then.
And which competition out of the three red ball competitions that they have now? Anyway, next super chat, please, Varun. We've got Manan once again. He says, do you think India has enough backup succession plan in the pipeline for aging stars Virat Kohli, Rohit Sharma, Jadeja, and Ashwin? Thoughts on people blaming Gautam Gambhir for the loss? Execution was bad. Batting was poor. They threw away a lot of wickets. And I don't think that age per se was the reason behind them. Ashwin and Jadeja very recently were blowing other teams to smithereens at home. Right?
They did destroyed Bangladesh, right? Who are better players of spin than this New Zealand side have been, right? So it would be hard to say that is the issue. The backup succession plan, I mean, they've got Washington Sundar is the best backup that you will ever see for Ashwin, right?
And it's the shining light for India in this test match because now they know that he can do that job going into the future and quite effectively at that.
Akshar Patel is a fantastic cricketer who's a backup for Jadeja. It's incredible that the kind of backup they have. Jaiswal, you know, coming into the side, just like Shubman Gill and Jaiswal will probably open together, right? Safraz is an incredible talent coming through. There are other younger Indian batters also on the rise.
Abhimanyu Iswaran is one of those guys. He could potentially open with
Jaiswal. I don't think he's young though, is he? I think he's older.
He's probably not young. Yeah, you're right.
I think he's like 28, 29. But look, there are younger players coming through as well. But the West Indies, well, actually, maybe they're the wrong thing. Australia had Brett Lee in their side. They had Mitchell Johnson coming through. Ben Hilfenhaus coming through, Peter Siddle coming through, and they were like, we'll be fine. They literally, Australia got rid of Stuart Clarke because we don't need Stuart Clarke. We've got these other guys. And it turned out that they needed Stuart Clarke and probably should have hung on to him for a little bit longer. You can't really succession plan in international cricket because your talent is your talent. Like there's not much you can do. What I would say is you don't want to get rid of four players of that group just because they're old and they've had one bad series. I know that's not quite the case with Virat and obviously Rohit's on a bit of downward curve, but I've also seen both of them look incredible form in other parts of the game of recent time. So I wouldn't throw out any of those players, but I would start to be having conversations about when they want to go and how they want to go. And I would give them the Jimmy Anderson treatment as well, right? Like of the way that England should have treated Jimmy Anderson was to say, we'll keep you as long as you want to play, but we're only going to pick you for certain games and we don't want you to moan about it because we're trying to build something else here. That is, Denver Nuggets at the moment have Russell Westbrook, I didn't mean that, but kind of the way he shot the other night, on the bench, right? You don't throw away someone of Russell Westbrook's intelligence, of his talent and everything else, but you also don't make him a starting player like the Lakers tried to do. Right.
Yeah. Also,
you don't keep giving him the ball in every game. What you do is you use him in a way that will help you. And then his experience is like having a coach and a mentor all in one for you. That's the way that is how international cricket should be played. But unfortunately, Bhairam, it's usually like, oh, we need to reset. And it's like, well, you're not going to, Australia
smooth
were like
transitions. International cricket does not believe in smooth transitions.
Oh, Australia was just like, we'll just find another Glenn McGrath. No, you'll find other bowlers. Right. And even Hazelwood, who was supposed to be, he was like the ninth new McGrath. Yeah. He's still not McGrath, right? He's a different kind of bowler again. And you don't just throw away that level of talent and experience and wisdom. That is not how you run a good cricket team. So I'd never do anything like that. But you have conversations with these guys and go, when were you planning on going? It's okay if you don't if you change your mind or whatever, and you want to go sooner, you want to go later, but we need to know, and this is how we want to use you. We, you know, saying to Ashwin, what if you play 50% of the test matches from here and we use Washington in the other 50%?
Yeah.
Like, that is a perfectly good conversation to have.
Absolutely. And I mean, speaking of transitions and teams in development, they could maybe take a leaf out of New Zealand's book, because that's what they've done, right? Their better teams didn't win in India, and this one has. He also had a bit about Gautam Gambhir. And I mean, honestly, you can't just scapegoat or single out one person for this sort of loss. It was just bad execution.
Gambhir, I saw Rohit get blamed for his captaincy. Rohit's been there for ages. We've seen plenty of really good captaincy from Rohit. If he captained bad in one series, it's the same. Captaincy form is no different than any other form. We keep keeping a captaincy form we never, ever factor in, right? But they are just normal parts of it. Gambhir's just taken over this side. I find it hard to believe that he has caused so many problems by taking over that they have suddenly lost to New Zealand.
And they just had that win versus Bangladesh in which they created history. So
exactly.
You have to take that into account as well.
But if he is just, I don't know, the worst toxic coaches, all this, it should be consistent losses. It shouldn't just be this one-off.
Yeah. All right. Next super chat, please, Varun. We've got Tanmay Joshi, who says, does New Zealand series win rank above Border Gavaskar 2021 and Sri Lanka's win in South Africa in 2019 as the best series win in the 21st century so far? Well, those two are definitely high up there. Bangladesh and Pakistan, you'd have to throw that in as well. But I still feel this might be the best one, because New Zealand weren't that good on paper. They shouldn't have won this test series, right? We just said that they're a team in transition and a developing unit. So it really is the weirdest one, if you ask me. India, on the other hand, are this juggernaut. They're not just your normal average team.
There's two Sri Lanka ones. There's Sri Lanka in 2014 as well, when they beat England. Okay, so let's just quickly go through them. The Border Gavaskar Trophy is not a huge discrepancy in talent, right? It is going to Australia, but Australia were no longer a hugely dominant side. And they, I wouldn't say they were going through a lull, but they were going through a medium period for them, right? Medium period for them, still pretty good. Heaps of Indian talent. The injuries is what makes that incredible. But you weren't going up against a great team who were firing on all cylinders when you went up against them. And then you smash them in the face. I think it's fair to say that there was some issues with that team at that point. South Africa in 2019 were not a particularly good side. So I still think it's an incredible win, and I don't want to take that against Sri Lanka. But also, it was kind of a one-off incredible come-from-behind victory. It isn't a sustained thing like we've seen from New Zealand. Sri Lanka in 2014 against England somehow draw that first test. They basically drew one game off the last ball and won one game off the second last ball. Again, it's a little bit more like that 2019 thing where everything went there. If you're looking for the biggest test upset, I think this is the one that you're looking for.
It has to be. Because Pakistan weren't playing well. That's the team that Bangladesh defeated as well, right? So this is huge. India number one.
Oh, sorry, I forgot that one. Yeah, so that one, I mean, I just think Bangladesh were a better side at that point, right?
Absolutely.
Like I just don't know. So again, I don't think that takes away from the amazingness. We talked about Bangladesh. I still think it was great that they won that and everything else, but it's very, very different. So, you know, and then you've got the fact that if you look at the top five greatest moments of New Zealand history, two of them have come in the last week.
Yeah, that's just flat out insane. Now, is this bigger than the women winning the T20 World Cup? I guess it has to be.
Yes, I think if the women had beaten India, England, Australia in their semifinals, finals, I probably would say that was still bigger. I think if you beat Australia in the World Cup finals, I think that's a bigger win than this. Right? Just because the Australian women are even more dominant than the Indian men have been, right?
Yep.
But I don't think, realistically, they got all credit to them because they played great cricket and they were one of the best sides in that tournament. I don't think anyone would doubt that. But they didn't actually, they had to go through West Indies and South Africa, which is a slightly easier one. I would personally rather go up against Nadine de Klerk in a World Cup final than I would Ashwin in Pune.
Yeah,
and Jadeja and Pune. Do you know what I mean?
Sums it up.
You know, I know Marizan Kapp played for them and Laura Wolfart and everything else. But when it comes down to it, like, it's just not the same. That South African team was a bit of had about six incredible players and a bunch of average players. Yeah. This Indian team, who's the worst player in this Indian lineup? Akash Deep?
Akash Deep.
I think he's a good young talent, right? I think he's a really good player. The second worst player in that team, I don't even know where you would go.
You can't say Washington, can you?
I mean, maybe, but it might be Washington, right? And it isn't Washington, right? So I think they're just such a solid team from, you know, 1 to 11 that I just find it hard to sit there and say, you know, that that isn't an amazing thing. And then it's the run, right? It's the it's the 4,331 days, Bayram.
Yes, that's it, 12 years. And I mean, both of those stories, New Zealand's victories, you know, the women and the men in Test cricket, they're great underdog stories. But I feel the magnitude about or surrounding this underdog story for the Test one, right, ending India's streak is far bigger. And what it's done for us is that now we're heading towards the end of the World Test Championship final or the cycle. And it's set up brilliantly. We couldn't really ask for more. Anyway, last super chat of the day. Let's take it quickly. We've got Junk Rig Sailor. He says, this is why we need to save Test cricket and why we cannot allow T20 billionaire owners to buy up all the good players in other countries. And there is more to Test cricket than just series between India, Australia and England. Yes, it makes for a good story. Is it repeatable? Not under the current model, you know, of the World Test Championship.
Yeah, I thank you for your generous super chat as well.
Oh, it is.
Also, I think the other way of looking at it is that this is why the billion Test cricket has been so fucking off the chain in the last 2 months.
It's been on crack. Literally, it's high.
I would not be surprised if there are a bunch of billionaires out there, Junk, thinking to themselves, why don't we just buy this thing? This is the fun thing. Like, people are, I think John Norman said to me today that this is going to be the Mitsantner test and people are going to remember that forever.
Yep.
I don't think, I'm trying to think of, do you remember the Tawatia knock? Right?
Yes, the 30 overs, 30 runs in the last over, was it?
Or whatever it was, when he was knocking around at Simon Dool said, no one ever catches up, and then he catches up. We don't actually have that many T20 innings and you know, a bowling that we kind of really remember in that kind of way, right? Whereas we have 46 all out, we have 36 all out, we have 52 all out, we have the Santner test, right? Like, you know, we have all these different moments that we attach. Test cricket, from a branding point of view, kind of beats T20 every time just because we remember it more, right? There are so many other ways that T20 works. So I have said this many times before, but there is a possibility in the future that we continue Test cricket, but it is not nation versus nation. Or if it is nation versus nation, it's owned by people rather than anything else. And that would obviously be very different. A lot of people would hate that, and I understand it. Mm-hmm. But Test cricket is fucking brilliant at the moment. I was watching both those tests, just being like, this is like watching, was it Sadiq Khan hitting? Sadiq Khan was the London Mayor. He's the London Mayor. And as far as I'm aware, he didn't hit any sixes. But I was watching him hit a six with the second new ball.
Yeah.
Right. And like, I was just like, I fucking love this sport right now. I fucking love this sport right now. Like, there is not enough test matches on at the same time. Give me another screen. Right, let's play Bangladesh, South Africa should have just kept playing, right? It's just absolutely brilliant. I've never seen a period like this in cricket before where it just feels like everything is crazy and entertaining at the same time. Enjoy this, everyone. I know Indian fans will be upset and English fans, and we'll do the English-Pakistan series as well. But I know they'll be upset and it's shit to be on the bad side of things and all that sort of stuff. But fuck me, enjoy the chaos. Because this is just a magnificent time to be a cricket fan at the moment. And if you love the sport rather than just your team, it's perfection.
Yeah. Test cricket is a beautiful monster and it's been more monstrous than ever before in this particular run of time. I mean, any prediction that anyone makes, the opposite is happening. And it's so enjoyable. And like I said earlier, we are set up brilliantly heading towards the end of this World Test Championship cycle. That's going to be it That's all from us in this particular podcast. Thank you to everyone for your super chats and your interactions in the comment section. A quick reminder to all of you, you can go to goodareas.co and bookmark that webpage. That can prove to be your one-stop shop for all the work that we do as part of this team, whether it be written content, podcasts or videos. We'll be back tomorrow again with another live show covering England versus Pakistan. And go and celebrate New Zealand's win just as a cricket fan, because who doesn't love an underdog story and crazy shit happening, you know? Like, India's streak at home is over. And I feel like anyone can kind of appreciate that.
Exactly. And also, I think it's also worth just remembering just how incredible that streak was. Like, it ended in such a weird way, but like, you'd go back and it's like, West Indies and Australia never did anything like that before. And specifically, it's the amount of wins in a row that I think is amazing, because Test cricket, as it is played now, for all of its peculiarities and everything else, is so fascinating because we have so many results. And because of that, we also have more upsets.
Have we jinxed them?
We didn't jinx Washington. So we played our part in trying to get India over the line. I can't bat and bowl for them, Bayram. I can't do everything.
Yeah, absolutely. And on that note, we shall take your leave. Do show up tomorrow as well. Hope you enjoyed this one. We'll be back soon enough. And that's all for now. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bayram Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, you will need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up great clips from your podcast chats and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.